Good afternoon, everyone. Do you hear me? Yes? Okay, great. Good afternoon, everyone. Oh, they warned me I can't walk around, so that's a problem. Anyhow, I will try to stay here, but it's not my habit to do that. So I'm Rudy van Hoo. I'm from Microsoft. As Bart says, I'm pretty new at Microsoft. I'm there since 1 year. Before that, I spent some time in the IT and the telecom business. I spent almost 10 years at Sun Microsystems. You probably know Sun. It doesn't exist anymore. It has been acquired by Oracle. The last 5 years at Sun, I was a software sales manager. I was taking care of the middleware business of Sun. So I'm pretty familiar with the Java communities, with open source, because at some point, Sun acquired MySQL, which is an open source database, so I'm pretty familiar with that world. Before that, I spent some time at Bell Helicom. I was, I think, probably number three at the internet division at Bell Helicom. It was the time when telecom operators realized that there was something like internet, so it was a really fun time. And before that, I spent 5 years in the Netherlands. So I was 5 years in Eindhoven, which is the south of the Netherlands, which is a good place to be. And at Philips Research, and I was in the software research department of Philips. And we did some really cool things at that time. So at some point, Philips decided to develop a programming language. So I spent some work on developing agent-based programming languages for consumer devices. So that was really a fun time. Anyhow, so that's my background. So as you see, have a quite a heterogeneous background. Today at Microsoft, I'm what they call the business group lead for server and tools. So I'm responsible for all those for the developer tools, Visual Studio, for great products like BizTalk, Hyper-V. Also, from a business and marketing point of view, I'm responsible for Azure. So I'm working a lot together with Bart and other people at Microsoft, putting Azure into the market, which is really a lot of fun. And also, from a data center point of view, I'm sort of responsible for the private cloud story. But today, I will now. I'm pretty new in that role. I almost work 1 year at Microsoft in what we call an interoperability lead. So my job was to really go to customers, go to partners, engage with open source communities, and really talk about interoperability, talk about open standards and open source. And the presentation I will present today is really a result of all those conversations I had with customers, governments, because if you look to government, federal government, but also the European Commission, they are very much into open standards, open source, so that was an important part of my job to engage with those people. And one of the things I realized in engaging with those people was that people tend to confuse what, for instance, interoperability or open standards is all about. So a lot of people think, well, open source equals open standards, hence Microsoft and IBM and Oracle are evil, right? So I built my conversation and my presentation, and I said, okay, when we talk about interoperability, so for sure we should at least agree what, for instance, open standards is all about, because if you have different views on that, well, it's a different conversation. So one of the goals of my presentation is to talk what I've sort of invented that, the five worlds of open, and to talk about what does openness really mean, what does interoperability really mean. So as you can see on the slides, I've sort of defined five worlds of open. I will talk about open standards, talk about open source, open documents. A really interesting topic also locally in Belgium is open data, and I will talk about open cloud, right? So what I will always do is try to agree with you what that really means, open standards or open cloud, and then I will explain what exactly Microsoft is doing in all those areas, what the kind of investments we are making, and why we are doing that. And an ask I have for you is that if you don't agree with me, you should just stand up and shout. So, and say, I don't agree with you. I like interaction. I can tell you I've spent many hours talking to open source people. Sometimes they were quite, let's say, not fanatic, but they were quite enthusiastic about what they were doing. So I like an open discussion. Also, Bart and myself would like to hear also your feedback, what we should do more in terms of open. If you say, well, you should invest more in this open standard or that or whatever, or you also give feedback if we should be more less closed or whatever. So please, please give your feedback. Don't be afraid of that. So what I usually do, I start my presentation with a conclusion. So, so that's easy, right? So I already put you in the right mindset. No, I'm just kidding. No, I find this is, you probably know Tim O'Reilly. I will immediately explain Tim who he is. But the last year, during various conferences, he's actually during various open source conferences, Tim O'Reilly has made this prediction about Microsoft, and you can read it. He basically say, well, I think that Microsoft will emerge as the champion of the open web platform, supporting interoperable web services. So, and that's, let's just say, that's my goal for me today, try to convince you that what Tim O'Reilly is saying, the prediction he's making, has grounds, let's say. It's based on facts. And just to convince you that we don't pay Tim O'Reilly for saying nice things about Microsoft, you know, for sure you know him for his books. I think he is the most famous book editor, publisher for IT. So his book has this camel-like figure on the books. But on the second thing, he's really have put some URLs here. So if you have time, I really invite you to look to his presentation, because he's really, I would say, a thought leader, an independent thought leader in the IT industry. He talks a lot about openness, about open source, about open data, about open cloud. So it's really quite an interesting person, and so it's. So it's great why if those kind of people are telling, making some predictions about Microsoft. Anyhow, so as I said, I talk about different worlds of open. I will start by open standards, and I think I don't have to explain you if you look to the data centers of a customer, you probably are a customer of Microsoft. By definition, your data center is heterogeneous. So what you have Microsoft technology, you might have Java technology, might even have mainframes or whatever. So the first thing you will say to Microsoft, IBM, Oracle, whatever, is that those application must be able to communicate with each other. So that's really what interoperability is all about. You must be able that all those different kind of technology are able to talk to each other. And that's, I would say, the importance of open standards. Open standards are at the foundation of interoperability. Now, it's very important to understand, and you probably know that, how open standards are defined. Typically, they are defined within a standard body. Some standard bodies are more impactful than others. I think OASIS, if you look to internet technologies, OASIS, W3C, those are very impactful standard bodies. And basically, some companies come together and agree to make an open specification, and that specification is accessible by anyone. So even when you do not participate to the open standard, you have access to the specification. Now, it's very important to understand that it's an open standard is a form of specification. It's not source code. Some people think, well, it's open standard, it's open source. You don't have, typically, you might have a reference implementation in the case of open standards, but it's not open source. And now the last bullet is quite interesting. I would like to have also your feedback on that one. Is that the whole open standards discussion or interoperability discussion is really related to the fact that you as a customer, you want to have choice in terms of the kind of vendors you work with. And if you work with a certain software vendor and you're not satisfied with that software vendor, you're able to replace that vendor. So the whole discussion and working at Sun, to be honest, if we came in at the customer side, our sales pitch, our high level sales pitch was always, well, we are based on our open standards, so you have a choice, right? My view on it really is that, yeah, open standards are really important for you as a customer, so you have a larger degree of independence from the software vendors you're working with. But the moment you make a choice, if you make a choice for Microsoft, IBM, or SAP, there's always a certain level of lock-in, and that's not bad, because the moment you know that you're sort of have made a choice, if you know that you have a certain level of lock-in, that's not bad, as long as you're aware of that, as long as this software vendor is working with open standards, so you're sort of not completely locked into that solution. So my experience is that open standards are important for interoperability or important for customer choice. Does that make sense? Is that your view as well, or I'm just talking marketing blah 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 or whatever? So what is Microsoft doing in open standards? Well, we're doing a lot of things. We are actually investing a lot of money into open standards. We are basically active in more than 150 standard bodies and a various number of standard bodies. The interesting thing, and that's sort of, and Bart knows that, is the second bullet is sort of my personal hobby. I mean, together with IBM, Microsoft, more than 10 years ago, was a pioneer in WS Star standards. And at that time, I was at Sun, and Sun was also known as being an open company, but we were against that, right? So we were focusing, Sun was focusing on Java, while at the same time, Microsoft was pioneering with IBM to put those standards in the market. And today, you have all those different WS Star standards, which are, I think, very important for you as an architect and for developers, for developing an application. I have also an example of a very recent example. It's called CMIS, so I have to read it. Content Management Interoperability Services. It's an OASIS standard. Now, the reason I mentioned that standard is, again, during the last year, I've been engaging a lot with governments, but and in Brussels, Flanders, but also in the Walloon part of our country. And the thing they were throwing at me, not literally, so I was saying, they talked about me on SharePoint. They said, SharePoint is a closed proprietary environment. We want to have an open source solution. And then I told, well, wait a minute, if you as a customer wants to have a collaboration environment, you want to have a content management solution, you go for a solution, right? And we, by the way, we support, together with IBM, with Alfresco, which is an open source solution, we support that open standard. And again, it's related to interoperability, because if you're a software developer, or as a company, you develop an application, you don't have to develop an application which is sort of hooked into Fileinet from IBM or into SharePoint. You write an application to this open API, and as a result, your application will integrate with all those different software vendors supporting the open standard. The second thing is, and it's marked in yellow, is that, and it has to do with the choice thing, is that, well, at some point you're not satisfied anymore with IBM Fileinet, which I perfectly can understand. And you say, I go for SharePoint, but I perfectly can understand. So with that open standard, it's sort of easy. I will not make it say that it goes like that, but it makes your life as a customer far more easier to move the content repository using the API going from FileNet to SharePoint or vice versa. So that's the kind of interesting results you have if you have an open standard like in SharePoint. And I will come back to that later on. Now, and that's also something I want to test with you, is that when I was making that kind of conversation, some people were saying, well, yeah, that's great. So you're supporting open standards, you're supporting web services interfaces at the level of SharePoint, but under the hood you have SQL Server, it's running on a Windows platform, so there we don't have any choice. And there my reaction is, well, what are you buying as a customer? Are you buying a solution, or are you buying a puzzle of different components you want to integrate and support? So the point I want to make is that if you talk about open standards, you have to decide on which level you want to have the open standard, right? If you want to have a sort of best of breed solution, then you have to build yourself the solution. You have to pick a database, you have to pick a platform. What we provide you is a very integrated solution. And at the level of solution, we provide you open APIs, so you're not that locked in as such. Does that make sense? If I would tell you that, I'm a sales guy, and I come in and you say, well, yeah, okay, you're open with the CMS stuff, but we are bound to use SQL Server and Windows platform. And if I say to you, well, no, you're buying solution from me, and I'm open at the solution level. And those SQL Server and that platform is just an engine, internal engine of that SharePoint thing. Does that make sense, or would you say no? I go for. I mean, both options have advantages and disadvantages. Nobody's shouting at me. Okay, that's good.
So, how are we sure that you implement the WoW standard in your product? How can we be sure that? Only implement the part that you're interested in, the part to pick up the data from another vendor, but not the part to export the data from another vendor.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Is that your experience, or
no?
But that's good. That's a good point. Yeah, indeed. If you have an open standard, it's a form of specification. If you adapt the standard, there is no sort of obligation to fully implement the standard of the right way. But then you as a customer, you're in the best position to challenge companies like Microsoft if I tell you in SharePoint we fully implement the CMIS, and you say, and it's not true, you're in the best position to challenge software vendors for that. That's a good point. Yes. In SharePoint 2010. Okay.
And it's not even in Documentum, not yet.
Eh?
I don't think it's in Documentum already implemented.
No? And not in Documentum?
Not yet.
Yeah.
We are working on it.
Yeah. This is the Oasis web page where you have the list of... Oh. So, well, if you go... I mean, you will get from Bart my presentation. You can have a look, but... Some big names are in there, IBM, EMC, so Documentum. Also, Alfresco, you probably know Alfresco. It's open source enterprise content management solution. And later on, I will talk about Drupal. You probably know Drupal, which is an open source web content management solution, which has a Belgian flavor because the creator is Dries Buitenhout. And we are engaging in some projects in Belgium, but also abroad, where we basically integrate Drupal as a web front end with SharePoint as a content repository and an enterprise content management solution. And we are using CMIS to integrate Drupal with SharePoint.
The question on interoperability of standard is more the time you will have to spend to be able to replace one component by the other. If I say let's replace SQL Server by Oracle, is it going to be like that?
No, that's the point I will make. It. So this open standard is working on the solution level, but SharePoint is fully integrated with SQL Server. But then my reaction would be to you, why should you replace SQL Server by Oracle? I mean, the solution as such is working fine. I mean,
it has to be at the solution level.
Yeah,
in such a way that you can still export your data and use it in another.
And that's what this standard is doing. You can export your data to Documentum, and if Documentum is using Oracle, well, it will be supported. But I understand that's a good discussion. I mean, it's yeah. This is another example, quite recent. You know that Microsoft is also quite active in unified communications. And this is another open standard border around unified communication interoperability. Because today, HP has its solution, Microsoft has its solution. The Juniper has its solution, and it's very important. It's about communication, so that those different unified communication solutions have support open standards, so you can integrate those different solutions. It's quite recent, and quite interesting to see that HP is part of the Microsoft, but Cisco deliberately didn't want to participate to that, which is a pity, actually, right? So that's a little bit about open standards. I think open standards are very important. And again, you will see when I talk about cloud, you will see that we are, and I'm sure Bart has already mentioned that in Azure, we really are very conscious about that to support open standards, but we'll come back to that. Now, another favorite topic is open source. I think the last 10 years we have seen a lot of open source projects, a lot of open source solutions, and the good thing about open source really, it has challenged the big players like IBM, like Oracle, like Sun in the past, but also Microsoft to the open source communities come up with creative development methods, they come up with creative business models, and again it's only an advantage for you as a customer that you have more choice. And they challenge the big players to come up with alternative solution with alternative business models. Anyhow, I think it's very important again to really understand what open source is all about, because there too there's a lot of confusion. Certainly, when people think about the price of open source, a lot of people think it's free. We'll come back to that. It's not free, and that's nothing wrong with that, but I think we have to be clear on that. Now, if you want to have a full definition, an official definition of open source, you go to that website, and there you will find the official definition of open source. I've taken some four bullets, which are, I think, fairly important. Typically, you have a community of developers, and in that community, you can have big companies, and we can have individual developers. We'll have some. They distribute binaries like we do, IBM, Oracle is doing, but they also distribute the source code. Typically, you have access to the source code, and you can really modify source code, and you can redistribute the source code. Yeah. Now, many people think that if they think about open source, there's no license. That's wrong. If there is, I mean, we can have a session of a whole day with a lot of lawyers. They will talk about open source and licenses. There are different open source licenses. So any open source project or product is governed by a license. That's you have to be clear on that. There are many of them. I think the most known is the GPL license, which is specifying that you can distribute source code and you can change the source code and redistribute it. Maybe you didn't know that, but the GPL license is very specific for OEM vendors. So when at Sun we sold MySQL license to Alcatel, and Alcatel was integrating MySQL into their intelligent network solution. And the GPL is saying, in that case, the customer must pay licenses to the open source project. So an OEM can never take open source code for free and use it for another project. That's one of the things what the GPL is stipulating, right? Now, if you look to open source, there are three open source models. And the original model is what we call the free and open software. Maybe you know Richard Stallman, the guy with long hair and never heard of. He's basically the also founder of the Free and Open Software Foundation. Now, the interesting thing about free software is that nowadays people think that free is like free, like in free beer. Gratis, gratuit. That was not the vision of Richard Stallman. His vision was a more, a philosophical vision in the sense that, well, it's say, why should software be the intellectual property of a company? Software should be free, like in the film Free Willy. So it should liberate software out of the hands. So you see, the original view on open source was really more, I would say, a philosophical view, principled view on software development. What happened, this free software concept evolved into a misconception that open source is free like in free beer. Gratis, gratuit. That's not the case. Anyhow, I think today you still have Richard Stallman and other people talking about free software. I think the majority of open source projects or commercial open source projects, and there we make a difference between community-driven and vendor-driven. So the Linux Foundation is a very good example of a commercial project, open source project, but it's community-driven. And in the Linux, you have IBM, Oracle, Novell, et cetera, et cetera. Also a lot of individual contributors. Now, the interesting thing about the Linux Foundation is that the majority, yesterday on the Linux Foundation released their annual report, and there you can see that more than 75% of the people contributing code to Linux are paid. So if you would think that open source community is some kind of hippie kind of community that everyone is doing everything for free, that's not the case. So there's, and that's, again, this is nothing wrong about that. It's really a very strong community. The same with Drupal. I know Dries Buitert quite well, and the strength of Drupal is really the community. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of developers contributing to Drupal, and makes them from a product point of view very powerful, but also very commercial point of view very powerful. But all of those contributors to Drupal have a company of their own, or they're working for a company and they're developing Drupal. So that's so the strength. Personally, I believe that the strength of an open source project can be really the community. If you have a strong community, then you have a strong open source product. That's what you see in the market. Now, the majority of the commercial open source projects are vendor-driven. There's basically one main company behind it. It can be a big company, like in the case of OpenOffice, it's now Oracle. It can be a smaller company like Alfresco. If you go to the community of Alfresco, for instance, you will see mainly engineers which are paid by Alfresco. That's what I mean by vendor-driven. So you have those types of open source companies on the market. And again, this is a snapshot of a blog of Matt Assey. Matt Assey, who used to work for Alfresco, now he's at Canonical, which is implementing Ubuntu, which is a Linux distribution. And he is saying, and Sugar CRM is a open source CRM solution. Jaspersoft is a BI solution. Alfresco, which is open source content. And the point I want to make here, what he's making here, is that open source companies are can be commercially very, very successful. And again, that's nothing. I'm not bashing open source here. That's nothing wrong with that. But the point I want to make is that. And that's also what Gartner is saying, that the majority of open source projects are really commercial in nature, and they have a commercial model somewhere. People also, maybe you have come across that. What does that mean, dual license models? I will explain it on this slide. The dual license model you will have in open source is that you will have a community version. And that version is free, like in free beer. You can download it and use it. In the majority of the cases, this community version is sort of a light version of the enterprise version. And the enterprise version, you will have to pay for it. I will explain how you will have to pay for it. And the enterprise version is always has enterprise features. So it has functionality which is not in the community version. So that's what people say dual license. You have two different licenses. Typically, that will be GPL license, and this will be another type of license. Open source, diehard open source, people call that crippleware. They don't like that. But that's the majority of open source projects. How do they earn their money? Well, they have just another business model. You don't pay a license fee, but you pay for support. If you go to Alfresco, an enterprise version of Alfresco, you will pay for support. The same with Acquia, which is the commercial version of Drupal, you will pay for support. So the commercial support open source models are really asking fees for support. They will never ask a fee for licenses. This is sort of the short tour I made in the open source world. Does that make sense? Is that also your view on the open? Yeah? Yeah.
Do the open source companies, commercial open source companies or driven companies, do they see that as part of support or not?
No, because they will not. There's a lot of customization of the open source code, right? But that will be typically be done by system integrators. So a lot of system integrators has seen a business opportunity in open source because they have access to the source code of the product. From a sales point of view, they can sort of say to the customer, it's for free, you don't have to pay licenses, and I will take care of the implementation and the support. So you have a lot of cases where a customer has using an open source product, it has been customized by a system integrator, and the system integrator is offering support on the customized product. That's what you see quite often. But an Alfresco or an Acquia who is offering cloud services on top of Drupal, they will never do that on customized source code. But you have a whole ecosystem of system integrators around open source who delivering support. You have small companies, but you have some big names like any global SI I know has an open source competency center. Accenture has one, Capgemini has one. Yeah. But it can be tricky on the licensing level. If you take source code, yeah, and you take MySQL as a database, and you build a new application as a system integrator, and you sell that as a package, MySQL and application to a customer, then you're infringing the GPL license. Because at that moment, you have to pay your NoEM, and then you have to pay. So there's a lot of, I mean, this can be a lot of, from a license point of view, it can be a big mess, but okay, anyhow.
Yes. Even if you don't extend the source code, because you just...
Even when you do not extend the source code, it's
the open source code.
No, even if you don't, you take MySQL, you don't change the source code, but you integrate it as an ISV, and you resell it, you sell it to an end customer, you're infringing the GPL if you don't pay for it. MySQL. That's again, there are a lot of lawyers earning a lot of money on the licensing and open source. Anyhow, but so I think to conclude, open source in the conversation also about the open source communities, there's something give the impression that everything for free. There's nothing for free in our Western world. So there's and that's what I said in the introduction on open source. The open source models, the commercial models, have challenged the traditional software vendors, and they come up with different development models because they work with communities. Microsoft, all the Microsoft products are developed by Microsoft engineers, right? Linux operating system is developed by Oracle, Red Hat, Novell, even think HP, and right? So the community, from a development point of view, can be very effective, right? And their business model is a model of what you see now in the cloud. It's a subscription model. You pay a support fee, and you pay that fee each year. As such, so I think that's what we have seen. Now, you might be surprised. You would say, "Well, Microsoft and open source—that's sort of water and fire, right?" No, that's not true. So we I will give you in a moment a couple of examples of our participation in the open source project, and that's sort of a summary. So there are lots of applications run on Windows. We have an open source technology center where we sort of test open source products, how we can integrate them with Microsoft products. We are very active in the PHP community, come back to Apache, Linux, come back to that. Eclipse, which is open source, you know that probably. It's the most popular open source Java development tool. So we are part of the Eclipse Foundation. We have a CodePlex Foundation, which is an independent foundation for hosting open source projects. Now, again, Microsoft, I'm not telling you that Microsoft is an open source company, right? But the reason we are investing a lot in open source is this. It's again, the interoperability thing. Again, you as a customer, you have a heterogeneous data center, you have an Apache web server, maybe you have a Red Hat of SUSE running. What you want is that Microsoft solutions can integrate with those kind of solutions. So it's again, we are making those investments for interoperability, right?
Did you mention the Mono project?
Yeah. Now I'm thinking what I can say. Because Mono is, yeah, Microsoft is involved in it, but we are not involved in it in an official manner, right? Mono is, if you don't know Mono is the open source implementation of .NET. So I don't know, Bart, if you want to say something.
Microsoft developed .NET. They also standardized it.
Yeah.
Posted to the standardizing committee and said, "Look, this is specification." Now, to prove that the specifications were working and gain credibility in the market, they went to Novell and asked Novell, "Here are specifications. Can you please implement this for us? We have our own implementation." So Novell implemented what we call the shared source version, which is the robot. And Microsoft has published those sources. As on top of that, then the Linux, or the open source community, from the Linux corner, has taken the same effort, has taken the specification, and has implemented that as well. Now, the head of that movement has made a commitment, publicly on paper as such, made a commitment that they will keep on following, and I think they are now up to .NET version 3.0. So they're still lagging behind a little bit, but in the end, they are doing .NET.
Yeah.
You can also have for the same specifications with the shared version of Microsoft. We have seen implementations running from FreeBSD and all those things. So for Microsoft, it's also specifying, showing that .NET as a standard way, in brackets, is developed by Microsoft, but as a specification, can be implemented. So Microsoft is providing all the documentation, all the APIs, and how it should be working. Because just for saying an API is not enough. You have also to explain how it should behave, demonstrate that it can be cross-platform, and Mono is one of the realizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're one of the communities we are actively supporting is PHP, and I know that. I mean, I know a lot of Java developers, and I know a lot of C# developers, C++ developers, and those kind of developers, are, if you talk about PHP to them, they will say PHP is not a language, right? So it's a programming language for dummies, basically, right? So, because in C Sharp and Java, you have all those great object-oriented stuff, and you can do complex things. No, the reality is that there are a lot of PHP developers out there. It's just a fact. So each year I'm going to FOSDEM. You know FOSDEM? It's an open source congress in Brussels. By the way, this year Microsoft is sponsoring FOSDEM. So that's, and FOSDEM is really die-hard open source community, and I was able to convince them that to sponsor them. So anyhow, if you go to FOSDEM, last year there were 10,000 people during the weekend. 10,000 people, those are not Java or C Sharp or C++ developers. They are all into PHP, they are in Drupal. So the point I want to make is that next to those, yeah, to those, let's say, the traditional developers, you have a huge community around PHP, right? And I mentioned Dries Buitenhuider, and Drupal is developed in PHP, and I once had a conversation with Dries. Dries has a PhD in Java, so he's Clive, smart guy. I say, well, why did you develop Drupal and PHP? And he said, well, two reasons. One is PHP is a very flexible language. You can do dirty things in it, right? So because in C Sharp and Java, you have to respect some policies if you want. But the main reason, he said, is the community. The reason that Drupal today is a huge open source success is that there are lots of PHP developers out there. And if by developing Drupal in PHP, immediately I had a whole bunch of people contributing to Drupal. So I would say, well, I'm not a PHP developer, but I'm just sort of describing the reality. And you see a lot of PHP in the web tier for websites, but I see more and more PHP in the enterprise. So I'm just describing what's really happening today. So we are really very active in supporting PHP on the Windows server, but also we have open sourced PDO, so an interface between PHP and the SQL Server. So we SQL Server is also supported into PHP. This is a PHP API for Azure. Another interesting thing that Microsoft has done, Microsoft has donated code to the Linux Foundation, right? So that was really big news. It's 1 year and a half ago. And so we donated thousands of lines of code to the Linux Foundation. And the reason why we did it, again, it's about interoperability. It has to do with our virtualization solution. So we have a hypervisor, and we wanted to make sure that we were able to virtualize Linux distribution. And that's what really the reason for supporting the Linux Foundation. Again, the interoperability story, right? We are a platinum sponsor of Apache. Apache, I think it's one of the most, I would say, known and respectful open source foundation. So we are one of the three, I think, together with IBM and I think Google. We are a platinum sponsor. We have various open source projects in Apache, and that this is quite an interesting one. It is it's called Apache Poi, and it's. We open source a number of Java APIs for Office. So if you're developing in Java, out of Java, you can create or change documents. That's the whole vision behind those API. Again, it has to do with interoperability. Of course, out of .NET, you can access Microsoft documents, but the whole idea is, okay, we must open up Office to the Java world. That's the Java point. Also, on the level of the browser, we have jQuery, which is an open source project. CodePlex is that foundation I was talking about. Stonehenge is all about, it's also an Apache project around enterprise service bus. And another secret is that we are, by an acquisition of Microsoft, we are also active in Hadoop. And Hadoop is the whole discussion in the cloud around large-scale NoSQL database. So, you see, are you surprised to see that, or did you know that we did all those stuff? And again, don't, we're not, I mean, we are doing that, not we are or will become an open source company. We are doing that, we are investing in those projects, again, out of interoperability. So that's the whole vision about that. And we have also a public website where you have the list of all the kind of projects we are doing around it, open source and interoperability. This is the Drupal thing I'm talking about, so we are sponsoring projects, and that's the kind of things we do with Drupal to support it on the Microsoft platform and support for SQL Server. Again, as I mentioned, we are doing also stuff integrating SharePoint with Drupal, so we're also looking to have Drupal on Azure as a web content management solution. If you as a customer wants to run your website on Azure using Drupal, today that's possible. So a lot of investment on that level. So that was a little bit of long story on open source. Was that useful, interesting? Okay. Then a couple of words on open documents. Open documents, it's all about open standards for document interoperability. And a couple of years ago, there was a big discussion between ODF. ODF is basically the format which is used by OpenOffice, backed by Oracle, IBM, and Novell, and OpenXML, which is basically the standard which Microsoft has put forward. Anyhow, the situation today is that you have two standards, OpenXML and ODF. An interesting thing is that Office is actually the only solution which is supporting both solutions. So if you're an Office user and you receive a document from OpenOffice in ODF, you can open it and change it and store it again as an ODF document. That's possible. You might have, and certainly in the case of spreadsheet, you might have compatibility issues between ODF and OpenXML, but it is due to the fact that ODF is not a complete, it's not complete yet as a standard. Today they are working on ODF 1.2, which might solve those issues. So that was a short discussion on open documents, because again, there's sometimes a lot of confusion about that. People tell me, yeah, if I want to open an ODF document, I need OpenOffice. That's not really the case. We basically can support both standards. Then another topic which I like a lot, and which is quite becoming more and more important, is everything about open data. And then I start this part of the presentation with a quote from the chief scientist of Google, and I find this really, and I, by the way, I have stolen it to this slide from Tim O'Reilly when he talks about open data. So what is Google? I find this really quite intriguing. He said, well, people think that Google is better than the rest because we have the best search algorithm. But he's saying, no, that's not the case. We just have more data. And Tim O'Reilly is using the quote from Google to open the discussion of open data, because if you go on the internet, it's a discussion about privacy, it's a discussion of who owns the data, and if Google has a lot of data about me, if you're using Google, I'm using Google, they know a lot of stuff about me, right? And it's all about is that who owns the data, Google or me, or how can I, if Google has data about me, can I have access to the data? So that's really quite interesting discussion. And so the whole idea of open data is basically started off in the government. And locally we have a great story on that one, right? Sorry.
I heard that Google is changing their algorithms every 6 or 7 weeks, mm-hmm. just to monetize the referencing.
Yeah. Yes, yes. But what he's saying is our strength is, okay, we have great search algorithms, but at the end of the day, our strength is we are the best search engine because we have the most data. We have just more data about you and me and whatever. Right? Now, I'm sure you know our Minister of Economy, Minister Q, right? And I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, but a couple of months ago, our railway company did send a letter of a lawyer to a student who had developed for an iPhone an application for the arrivals and the departures of the trains. You heard that? And the railway company, which is, by the way, a public company, it's paid by us, they were suing this student because they say, you have stolen our data, being departure and arrival of trains. So the whole idea about open data, which started off in open government, is that I'm a government. And I see it as one of my services to the citizen to supply data which are not private. I mean, they will not, the government is not, should not be able to give private data about me to you, for instance. But there are data like arrivals and departures of trains, which are public, which are, at the end of the day, paid by all of us, should be made available. So that's the whole idea about open government to provide information on weather information map. By the way, Minister Q, then when that happened, he took contact with the student and he took contact with NMBS. And finally, the NMBS realized they were really stupid to do that, and they stopped with that. So anyhow. So. what you also see, I have some examples of that. You have also the opposite, where we call that crowdsourcing, where citizens are supplying data to the government. I will give you some. There are some famous examples in the UK, for instance, about that. So, based on the idea of open government, we should publish data which are not private. You have the whole discussion on open data, and I've tried to make a definition, and I mentioned between brackets, it's an ongoing work. It's all about data must be accessible. Remember, Google is saying, I have a lot of data, but they're not accessible. And data formats must not be non-proprietary. And again, Microsoft is, I think, very leading in the open data discussion we have. I will come back to that. We have an open data API, which is open source, by the way. And it's the idea about the open data protocol is really to make sure that data is accessible and it has a non-proprietary format. And we have the Open Government Data Initiative. And then there's another prediction of Tim O'Reilly. He's saying, well, I think what will happen, I'm not saying that's true, but he said, I expect that Microsoft will do some open source stuff in search and maps. And that's really related to the things we are doing in open data. This is what we call the Open Government Data Initiative. It's a number of software assets which are running on Azure. That's quite interesting. Those software assets are, you can find them on CodePlex, which is the open source foundation, so they are open sourced. You don't have to pay for the Open Government Data Initiative software assets. So as a government or as a system integrator, you can go over there, use those assets, and make sure and develop an open data application. So today we are talking, for instance, to FEDECT, which is the Federal ICT Organization. They want to run an open data test. Minister Q owns FEDECT. They want to run an open data initiative on Azure with those solutions. And we're also talking to Frank Dessart, which is CIO of Ministry of Economy, because Ministry of Economy, they have a lot of statistical data, which is, at the end of the day, also public data. And you as a citizen, you as a company, should be able to have access to that data. So we are looking how we can make those data as open data public on the Azure platform. So that's, those are really cool cool projects we are doing. We are starting to do. This is an example of Azure with the Open Government Data Initiative assets. It's the city of Vancouver. You have the URL over there, and it's a typical example of open data where you can all sorts of information about hospitals, etc., 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 etc. Also using Bing. This is another nice example. You know that Obama has spent is spending a lot of money in the American economy. So it's also a cloud application. It's SharePoint. It's not Azure. It's Amazon in that case. And as a citizen in the US, you can sort of, you have a map of the US. And if you click on the different states, you will see how much money they have got from Obama, how much money they have already spent. So you can sort of real-time follow on which projects the tax money is being spent. Again, that is open data. It's all about transparent government. So I think that's also when we will have a government. I think that's a very good idea. And again, it's from a technology, it's cloud, it's open data, and it's making data available public. And again, we are not infringing privacy or whatever. I think that's one of the things a good governance should do for citizens. I was talking about the crowdsourcing thing, so citizen providing data to the governments. In UK, you have a number of interesting, the whole crowdsourcing thing started off in the UK, and they have a number of websites. A famous one is Fix My Street. Last year in the winter, like now this year, it was a hard winter, and in English it's called potholes, so haten in the weg. Yeah? And so citizens can say, well, in this street there is a pothole, or this, the light is not working anymore. So that those websites are very popular in the UK. And today we are looking with a number of communities here in Belgium how we can set up the same solution based on Azure in that case. And that's an example of a crowdsourcing solution running on top of Azure. It's called StreetCare. It's developed by a Microsoft partner in Spain. And there you have the whole idea of crowdsourcing running on Azure. So I was talking about the Open Data Protocol. I really recommend to have a look to that protocol, and the whole idea is that what I said is that you can say that in a lot of cases data are sort of hidden, locked into an application, and the whole idea about Open Data Protocol, how can I unlock those data from applications. And to come back to my discussion on SharePoint in the beginning being open or closed, if you go to SharePoint 2010, in SharePoint 2010, we support the Open Data Protocol. So via that protocol, you have access to all the data which are inside, basically, SharePoint. The same, of course, we support Open Data in Azure, SQL Server, but also not only Microsoft, increasingly IBM is supporting that Open Data Protocol. So I expect really that certainly when you talk about cloud services, I expect increasingly not only Microsoft but all other cloud providers starting to support that protocol. That's another example of an application running on Azure supporting OData, but not only .NET, Java, and PHP running on an iPhone in that case. Okay, so that was Open Data again. It's linked to government, but it's today much broader. It's all about unlocking data which are residing in an application in the cloud, and expect to see more on that. Then, open cloud. So I don't think I have to give you a definition on cloud. I'm sure Bart has done that this morning. Now, open cloud is interesting, but a very, I would say, a very complex discussion. It's all about how defining standards for cloud and for I will immediately talk about identity in the cloud, but for sure Kim Cameron will talk, knows a lot more about that. But it's also, you today we don't not only have Amazon and Microsoft offering cloud services, there are a lot of cloud providers today, and the whole thing is how will you as a customer, you will consume cloud services from Microsoft, from Amazon, I don't know from whom, and you will, how will those cloud providers talk to each other? So it's all about interoperability in the cloud. How will we realize that? And today, I will give you some examples. Today, we already have some different activities around standards and cloud, but it's just starting. It's pretty complex because it's about management, it's about API, so it's a huge job to do. If you talk about standard interoperability, here we have listed four, I think, key elements which are crucial for interoperability. And the first one is data portability. But I have covered that with Open Data Protocol. If you support as a cloud provider the Open Data Protocol, you basically allow data portability between one cloud and another. Support of standards. From a customer point of view, that's an interesting one. Well, not an easy one. That's ease of migration. I have an application running in cloud A and I want to move to cloud B. Can I just pick my application and throw it on the other cloud? That's kind of interesting discussion, the ease of deployment and developer choice. I mean, I'm a .NET developer, I'm a Java developer, I'm a PHP developer, I'm developing in Ruby. Can I do that? Can I use Eclipse and deploy my application on the cloud, on Azure, on Amazon? So that's the kind of interoperability discussion we need to have in when we're talking about cloud. Here, if you have the URL over there, this is sort of website which gives you an overview of the different standard initiatives which are going on today in around cloud. And as you will see, those are very, you have really very different groups working on standards. You have people flying in from the telecom world. You have people like this one is very much related to virtualization. So it's IBM, Microsoft, and VMware. So you have people, you know, the grid people are now jumping on the cloud bandwagon. So you have a lot of standardization work going on, and people are coming from different angles to the cloud. So, but you have the URL over there. Have a look on that. Now, I'm not sure whether Bart has shown you that, but for sure he has been talking about Azure. That's for sure. Which is quite interesting to see when Microsoft released Azure, the first version of Azure, there was support, of course there was support for .NET as a platform, as a service, but from version one on, there was support for Java, for PHP, MySQL. So that's interesting and quite amazing. I think even some people inside Microsoft were surprised to see that, and I think that with supporting those technologies into Azure from version one on, it's a very important statement from Microsoft towards the customers, towards you, basically saying that, well, again, and then it's related to the fact, well, we know, if you are a customer, you have .NET applications running in your data center, you have Java applications running in your data center. If you move to the Windows, Microsoft Cloud, we will support you in those platforms as well. So today, and if you're a Java developer, you don't have to use Visual Studio. We have an SDK for Eclipse, and out of Eclipse you can develop Java application and deploy it on Windows Azure. That's fully supported. Same with PHP. So I think really think that's an important value proposition we have within Azure, and today we are the only cloud provider really doing that.
Well, would you still have a MySQL runtime in there if you already have a MySQL Azure?
If you're a customer and you have a LAMP application, you have an application running on MySQL using PHP, and you want to move it to the cloud, you can easily do it. Yeah. Mm. But your point is valid in the sense that I think the whole this at some point the cloud will make the discussion we had just before around open source, Linux or Windows, MySQL or SQL Server or Oracle Database. You as a customer of a cloud, you want to consume a service. At the end of the day, you just don't care if that service is based on Windows or Linux. No, you have an SLA with the cloud provider, and if the only thing you want that the cloud provider is implementing that SLA and you can consume that service. Of course, Azure, as Bart has told you many times, is a platform as a service. It's an application platform, right? And as an application platform, as a service, we need to support a number of development technologies, .NET, Java, and PHP. But you're right. At some point, that discussion will become irrelevant. You just want to have an API to a database in the cloud. If it's SQL, if it's, I don't know what, Hadoop, you don't care. Is that important for you to have this in Azure, to have these different technologies supported? Is that, Bart and I, we were last week, or 2 weeks ago, on DevOps, which is the big Java conference in Antwerp, and a lot of Java developers came to our booth, and they were positively surprised that we got a lot of traction in supporting Java on the Azure platform. Another thing we do, I've spoken about Sugar CRM, which is an open source CRM solution. We are supporting that on Azure. By the way, it's developed in PHP. It's a CRM solution. This is this DMTF standardization work. I think this is a very important one because it's related to management and virtualization in the cloud. And we have players like VMware in it, IBM in it, and Microsoft in it. So I think you as a customer, I think you're very much interested in standardization work around virtualization and management of cloud, and that's the work which is going on in that standard group. That's another one. It's related to standardization of PHP APIs for cloud, and Zend is the most popular PHP development environment. We have Microsoft, IBM, we have Rackspace is I think next to Amazon one of the biggest hosters and infrastructure as a service providers. So, another interesting one is, do you know OpenStack? It's OpenStack. OpenStack.org. It's an initiative of Rackspace, but meanwhile there are 20 companies, including Microsoft, part of OpenStack, and OpenStack is an open source cloud platform, and again we are active supporting OpenStack to have the OpenStack running on the hypervisor of Windows Server. So that's quite recent. And another favorite topic of Bart and myself is identity and cloud. I will not talk a lot about that because Kim will do that. But the good thing for you is there's already some standardization work started within OASIS. It's called OASIS Identity in the Cloud. Microsoft is part of it, Red Hat, and the whole idea is we have to get. There are already a lot of standardization work around identity, like SAML, WS Security, so that we have already a lot of open standards in that area, which are supported by our solutions. But for sure, there's still some work to do around identity in the cloud. So it has started, and again, one of the challenges we have with cloud, you're a customer, you have your data center or your private cloud, as we call it, and you're consuming different services from a public cloud, from a dedicated cloud, and from a private cloud. And then how will we take care of access, validating identities of consumers, of services? How will we federate identities between this provider and that provider? If I've been validated in the dedicated cloud and I'm referred to the public cloud, do you want to validate my identity again? No, we have SAML for that. So there's today we have already a lot of, at least from a Microsoft side, we have already a number of building blocks to make that happen. But that's what will be very important for you as a consumer of cloud services. And I'm basically done. That's my last slide. It's basically a conclusion. And the first bullet is my first slide. So it's Tim O'Reilly again. So I think, at least I hope I have sort of convinced you that we are pretty serious about interoperability, that we are investing in all sorts of open things, open standards, open source, and we are basically doing that to deliver interoperable solutions, certainly in the cloud, to customers. This bullet is also important because if you talk to open source people, I think interoperability, open standards, and open data, or at least as important as open source, in the sense that open source does not equal open standards. There are two different things. And what you want as a customer at the end of the day is this interoperability. And again, what I've told you in the open source discussion, open source versus Microsoft is not a discussion between free, like in freebie, or in paying, or open or closed. I mean, that discussion should be driven by added value. You buy stuff from Microsoft because you believe that technology has an added value for your business. You buy stuff from Oracle for the same reason. And you will go for an open source solution also because you believe that open source solution has an added value for your business, not because it's free. Because that's, if you do it for the free thing, then you're doing it basically for the wrong reason.